bringing you key insights, tips, and advice from the brightest minds in the Canadian franchise industry. This is the Franchise Canada Chats podcast. I'm Gary Prenevost, your host of the Franchise Canada Chats podcast, where we take you into the world of franchising. Season 7 of Franchise Canada Chats will feature interviews with franchisees, franchisors, and industry leaders sharing key insights and expert advice on navigating challenges on their path to success. Franchise Canada Chats is brought to you by Frannet, Canada's franchise matchmaking experts. At Frannet, we help you to build your optimum business model. Then we introduce you to well-suited franchise options. Then, most importantly, we coach you through all aspects of your research so that you can arrive at an informed and defensible yes or no decision. Hello, everyone in Franchise Canada land. This is Gary Prenevost, president of Frannet of Southern Ontario and author of the just-released book, The Unstoppable Franchisee. It's my pleasure to welcome today's guest, Matt Hickman. Not only is Matt a Mr. Reuter Plumbing franchise owner, but he's also a multi-brand owner with the Neighbourly family of brands owning a Mr. Electric franchise as well. Matt was formerly the owner of King's Pump Shop, a water treatment services company, and had all but cornered the market. So we're going to speak to Matt today about his pre-franchise experience, then transitioning into franchising and being part of the Neighbourly family, which is a global brand, a multi-billion dollar organization with nearly 30 different brands, and all the different things prospective franchisees need to understand about being a multi-brand owner. So Matt, welcome to today's episode of Franchise Canada Chats. Tell us a little bit, please, about how you come to join the Neighbourly family of brands.
Sure, and thanks for having me. I first heard about Neighbourly from an acquaintance of mine who, at the time, was an electrician, and he was looking to start his own business and had heard about what was then called the Dwyer Group and is now known as Neighbourly. And was investigating buying a Mr. Electric franchise in the St. John's market, which he ultimately did do. He and I met, he wanted some advice on just, you know, how to finance a business and how to get started. And I was originally a little bit skeptical because, you know, the trades can be pretty busy, and he seemed to be, you know, he had his own little business and seemed to be sort of building it nicely. And I was I wasn't sure why he wanted to partner with another organization, and we talked about it. And while he was picking my brain, I was listening to him and his enthusiasm for the franchise concept. And at that point in time, basically over the course of about that hour, he sort of sold me on the idea of coming up with Neighbourly. And we started with I was trying to convert my HVAC company, a small HVAC company, trying to convert it away from new construction more into service, maintenance and replacement, and he introduced me to the concept of AirServe in that discussion. So we left that meeting where I had walked in thinking I had to talk him out of this franchise stuff, and instead I drove back to my office as quick as I could and called franchise development and spoke with them about possibilities and how I could build something for myself through their group. And Gary, my friend, did operate the Mr. Electric for a number of years. He did ultimately sell the business when he and his business partner moved into different areas, and we got involved later. But originally, it was something that was never on my radar until Gary really explained the rationale, and just light bulbs went on for me all over.
And I find that fascinating because at with your other business, you know, most people when they're running an independent business, non-franchise, the mentality is, why would you ever buy a franchise? You're giving away royalty fees. You're giving away all that. Why would you give that away? So tell us a little bit about, you know, the mental journey from being that non-franchise business to being a franchisee, please, Matt.
Yeah, and it is definitely, it seems very counterintuitive, and it seemed that way to me at first as well. I got to the place I got to as an enthusiastic franchisee because we were trying to change our business. I wanted more service, maintenance type of business as opposed to things related to new construction or things to new projects, you know, whether municipal projects or industrial projects or whatever, that can be cyclical. And I didn't know how to do it. I had no expertise in the space. So the appeal was partnering with a very ethical company, which Dwyer Group and later Neighbourly. I can attest to their ethic and integrity personally, but at the time I trusted Gary's perspective on them. And I knew that they had something I didn't. They had a system. They had a system that was replicable and scalable, and that's what sold me on it. The idea that they were delivering value, and yeah, once a week money goes out the door to the franchisor. That's no different than any other vendor you partner with. I have to pay for everything else that we utilize as well. But in this case, I was getting what I thought would be potentially a high value proposition, a lot of knowledge and support, insight, and systems that I didn't have the know-how or time to develop myself.
And I think the core element here is what is the value you get from being part of a proven system. So, you know, there's a cost of doing business and there's a cost of learning. So the royalty fees, this is what I think a lot of franchisors or would-be franchisees need to understand is how much value am I getting for the royalty dollar? How are they helping me compress my time through the launch phase and then accelerate once I've got the business figured out, accelerate my growth. And that's where the value of by what you're saying, part of the reason why you bought into this.
Yeah, oh no, that is the reason that I was compelled to jump on this so quickly. And I think it took about 6 months from that meeting with my friend to the time that we opened our excuse me, our first Neighbourly concept. And that value equation, and everyone has to do their calculus themselves. Everyone has to figure out what franchisor they're partnering with and research them and make sure they understand them. And make sure they understand how it can help their business. I know that they're not all the same and everyone's situation is different. But for me, it was a real force multiplier. I was getting established for us, established vendor relationships in some cases, and certainly a lot of industry specific guidance on best practices, on front of house operations that your customers might see to the back of house stuff. And I already had a good handle on how to run the businesses I was in. But these businesses were different, and every business requires a whole new set of learning, and skills are transferable, but specificity, industry by industry, Neighbourly had that. So it's certainly you use the phrase, I think, compress your startup time, and it did that probably immeasurably. I'm not sure how long it would have taken for us to arrive where we are. I don't know if we would have. So that value equation for
Interesting.
me has been net positive from day one.
That's always great to hear, and it's no surprise being Neighbourly is one of the strongest platform organizations out there.
Sure.
That figuring out what is the right franchise, that's all the work that I've been doing for over 20 years. So I completely understand that and help people go through that journey. Before we get into talking about the experience with your franchise businesses, when you look back to the elements that you were running your previous business, were there any core skills or specific experiences that really helped you to assess or consider so you can leverage it going forward?
Yes. But my path is a little bit non-traditional. A lot of people in trades-based franchises often come from the trades themselves. They have the skill set to do the work. I don't, and I wish I did. My skill set, because I've been involved in businesses for many years, is a bit different. So I was able to utilize the financial experience I have. I'm definitely a numbers guy, and I was able to use those skills that I'd kind of honed over, the 10 or so years running businesses prior to joining up with Neighbourly. And that helped. That certainly helped because math is math, and being able to read financial statements, understand them, being able to do budgets and projections, and being able to, analyze and course correct as needed was a skill set that I'd already developed to a certain extent, and I'm still learning it every day. But that was a skill that I feel I already more or less had. And so that helped made the transition a little bit easier than had I been a complete newbie to the world of the numbers.
And the you know when I hear the what you just said about the not having the trades background, where my brain goes is that probably kept you safer working, staying focused on working on the business instead of working in the business. People who know the work, they want to do the work instead of the heavy lifting of getting the customer, right? It's a very common trait that people with that experience take longer to ramp up because they're doing what they like to do instead of hiring and delegating that responsibility so they can grow the business.
No question, no question. I think that really helped. But I've seen in the Neighborly group examples work in either direction, and people have built spectacular businesses coming from the from the tools, or from the from the spreadsheets. I've known examples of both. Certainly, like, I didn't have the option of just hopping in a van and going and doing the work, so I had no choice. I would have that. No one would let me into their house to change a light bulb, never mind actually do, code compliant work. So I had to partner with people who had those skills. I had to find a good team and build the team out. But yeah, not having an option of hopping back in the van forced me to grow the business to the point where it could support the technicians and support the business.
Let's talk a little bit about that journey from single unit franchise owner to multi-brand owner. Tell us a little bit about that evolution, please.
Well, sure. Well, as I mentioned, I started with, with this with my HVAC division, and we had a successful exit from that business a year ago.
This is
Frankly,
AirServe that you mentioned.
correct. Yeah, correct. That's where I started, and then we don't have that. Like I said, we had a successful exit last year, but there was a Mr. Rooter in our area, and I got wind that the owner was basically looking to do something different. He had a bunch of other. He had some businesses, and he had a. Another career as an instructor at a trades college. So he had a few different things on the go. And I got a phone call from Neighborly asking if I'd be interested in looking at operating the Mr. Rooter here in St. John's. And their office was right across the street from mine. So all I knew was that their vans were constantly moving. And that looked like a green shoots to me. Like that's an early tell that the business is doing well. And for me, you see more and more in these trades businesses where large independent shops even are offering multi trades under one roof. Plumbing, heating and electrical all tend to work well together. So it was just a good defensive strategy to make sure we could offer more to our customers. And I knew that Mr. Rooter was a well-established brand, both in our market but also in North America. And Neighborly was great to they certainly encourage multi-unit owners. They're very honest about a lot of the challenges because the mistake we made at first, and we learned quickly to remedy this, was that even though the franchises are similar and even though there's the same parent company, each industry is different. So the operating parameters of each industry are a bit different, and there's a lot of learning. You can't simply cookie cutter one to the other. I think if Neighborly had done that or tried to run a business that way, they wouldn't be successful franchises. In this instance, they were very clear on what the differences were between AirServe and Mr. Rooter, for example, and it made it very easy for us to make the transition after the first couple of months of spinning our wheels a little bit, trying to sort of operate Mr. Rooter like it's an AirServe. We kind of yielded to their system and got pretty good traction pretty quickly.
Okay, so how long did you have the AirServe franchise before you bought the Mr. Rooter?
Less than a year.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, that was I'm not sure that was our journey. I'm not sure if it's the best one, but the opportunity presented
Well,
itself.
yeah, because I typically describe year one as the learning year, year two is the building year. So you built, but one of the ways of building is through acquisition. The more common way is through organic, the heavy lifting of growing a customer base. So you just mentioned a couple advantages of owning multiple brands, that defense against the customer or the competitor, multiple services to the same customer, so better revenue per customer. And what are some of the other advantages that you experienced of owning multiple brands?
Well, in this industry, there's good economies of scale. We use a lot of the same vendors. So, the more business we can offer vendors, the more likely they are to offer us favorable pricing and terms and better service. And, we were able to leverage the customer base from one brand to the other. So our marketing costs, per customer could be amortized over a couple of brands, a couple of different SKUs, if you want to think of it in those terms, because I mean, at AirServe, every home we went into also had plumbing, and we just simply had to inform and introduce ourselves as not only being their HVAC company, but also their plumbing company. And as Mr. Rooter gained traction, it started to feed leads over to AirServe and vice versa, and that was really effective. That really gave us a pretty quick start on growth. And lastly, administratively, I mean, you're running these businesses, and they are different, but you can certainly have anything from call takers handling multiple brands to the accounting and bookkeeping functions. There's economies of scale just by growing the business, whether you're growing it in a single vertical or across a couple of others. You're still adding better utilization of your people and the systems that you've invested in. So it allows you to grow the business efficiently that way.
Enjoying the episode so far? Franchise Canada also has bi-monthly newsletters full of franchise opportunities. With Franchise Canada e-news, new content gets sent directly to your inbox, and you can keep up to date on the newest episodes of the Franchise Canada Chats podcast that you're listening to right now. Plus, you get a free subscription to Franchise Canada magazine. Join the 19,000 fellow franchisees, industry leaders, and aspiring entrepreneurs by subscribing at franchisecanada.online. Now, back to the episode.
And you know, the challenge of running two businesses, you can't be in two places at the same time. So how do you manage the separation? How do you oversee day-to-day operations across multiple businesses?
Well, yeah, and that proved to be a challenge, and it's just something you've got to find the right balance that works for you. For us, as we grew our AirServe and we grew our Mr. Rooter, about 4 or 5 years later, we added Mr. Electric. As I mentioned, my acquaintance had left the industry, and so we worked with Neighborly on Mr. Electric in St. John's. And at that point, we had this three-headed monster. We had to sort of just put in good reporting lines of communication. We had some people in the organization who had sort of grown with the company and were ready to step up a little bit. So we put in basically, without putting in too many layers, we put in just a bit of a different management structure just to make sure we had, people who were subject experts in each of the three brands we were operating. And the last thing I did on Mr. Electric was probably the smartest thing I've done, is I partnered with somebody in that one. And I partnered with someone I'd worked with for a long time, someone who worked with Canes actually, and then sort of didn't work directly with AirServe and never worked with Mr. Rooter, but was involved in the work that Canes was doing and had an entrepreneurial bent of his own, and he wanted to work with me on seeing maybe there was a way he could eventually own his own business, and this seemed like a natural partnership. He also has an electrical license, which helps. But he had a lot of capacity and skill set that I didn't. Partnering with somebody like that, that you know and trust, is always something I would recommend.
So I'm hearing several key important things there. One of them, building the management structure per brand. The franchisor brings the systems and the processes, the franchisee has to deliver on execution. And as you go from wanting one company being hands-on, and their day-to-day, you have to move up into the management and oversight. And I think this is, and I'd like your comment on this. I think a lot of people, when they start to move up that chain of responsibility, they should be delegating accountability and responsibility. But I find a lot of times, because they don't understand enough, they abdicate responsibility and accountability, and then they don't stay tight enough to the tracking or the managing of it. So what would you say to that? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I'd agree completely. And that's something we have to guard against every day, because we're still a small business. We're still, we're not like an enormous company now with, hundreds of employees or anything. So the day gets busy, and it's very easy to, whether it's abdication or just, you're allowing the urgent to overpower the important. You've still got to keep focused on the things that matter and make sure that these things get done, whether they're tasks, or whether it's analysis or training or you name it. The list gets longer. It seems to cross off one, and two more go on it. But as people develop within the organization, hopefully you get a good sense of what their interests and what their capacity is. So as they move up, there's a culture in the organization pre-existing, hopefully, that of getting things done and of sort of focusing on what matters. And you're picking the right people because you know them and you work with them and help them develop over the years. And they're ready for the next challenge.
So that development of the talent constantly, that, and not only development of the talent, I'm also hearing the striving for operational efficiency, operational excellence. You, and I know Mary Thompson, COO of Neighborly, that's one of her, striving for operational excellence. I interviewed her for my book, and that was one of the key things that she talked about. So as we start to wind down the episode today, what's your advice for business owners, prospective business owners looking to get into franchising? What would you say to them, Matt?
The first thing I'd say is, understand the industry and understand the organization you'll be partnering with. It is very much a partnership. And a lot of people that I've met in the business community, in the franchising world, have come into an industry that they don't have a lot of familiarity with. And so they're seeking a franchise to sort of bridge the knowledge gap. I do think it's really important that everyone just press pause and make sure they really understand the franchise company that they'll be dealing with, because it's a long relationship and it's a critical one. And you have to make sure the company's values matches your own. You need to talk to existing franchisees and learn what their experience has been, and make sure it's a good fit. Because I see Neighborly as very much a partner in my business. Now, I also see myself as their customer. I send them money in exchange for goods and services. So, and I will, I'll advocate for our company as a customer from that perspective when I need to. But I understand they have very clear and real business needs. They've been very clear on communicating them. And they, they need to win too. And making sure you understand it as a partnership is critical. After that, I mean, business is ultimately business. Some people might like one industry or have an aptitude for one thing over another, and that's fine. But if you've got a good franchise partner, one that you can see working with for 10, 20, or 30 years, it just makes things so much easier. So that first research step is critical.
And a lot of times I get a lot of my initial, when people are just starting the search, they have income goals, they have expectations or desires. And a common question I get is, how much money can I make? Mm. And I tell them it's completely the wrong question. That's important. You don't buy business without knowing that. But the right question is, what is the work you have to do to earn the kind of money you want to make? And that's where, coming back to what you just said, understanding the franchise or the culture, franchise or the franchisee, franchisee to customer, and really important is franchisee to franchisee, who you're getting a lot of that intellectual knowledge from as you share best practices. But they've got to execute and do the work, so they need to understand what that grind looks like, because a lot of people are unprepared for how hard it is and how much work it is.
No, I was going to just say, I agree with that last point you made completely. And I don't think it could be emphasized enough. At the end of the day, you still got to do the work. This is not a business in a box. None of them are, where you simply, put up your shingle and it doesn't matter if you're buying one of those massive, food brands that everybody knows. I know people who were involved in, the quick service food industry and a very substantial brand, but they still have to work and their phone doesn't stop ringing. So yeah, you've got to be prepared to do the work. You'll have a system, you'll have an opportunity, and you'll have a wonderful network of people who are doing the same thing you do every single day, and the other franchisees. And they in Neighborly, that's been a tremendous help. But at the end of the day, it's still on us here in this office, and up the hall and out in the vans and in the customers' homes every day to execute. And that doesn't change whether it's a franchise or a greenfield startup.
No, the only place success comes before work is in the dictionary.
Exactly.
Kids these days go, what's a dictionary? What about advice for prospective multi-brand owners? So they might be a little bit further behind in there. They've got one unit with one brand, or they've got a couple of units, and now they're thinking about expanding to other multi-brand ownership. Any suggestions for them?
Every circumstance will be different. I mean, for me, there's a natural synergy between the work that we do, between the three trades that we have and the two that we have now. There's a lot of overlap, and so that makes it a bit easier. And we're also partnering with the same franchisor. So while they're different brands, I already have relationships with the organization and have a lot of confidence and faith in them. And that makes it easier. But at the same time, if you were looking at two completely different industries with completely different franchisors, it's just make sure you're ready. Make sure that you've got a business that not necessarily running itself, because that's sort of almost like a mythical goal that you never really attain, but make sure you really have a good handle on the business you're running before you branch out. It's been a very powerful growth accelerant for us, and people are probably more capable than they realize, because as you probably know, running a business, running an air server, running a Mr. Router, is actually like running multiple businesses anyway. You've got different market segments you're competing in. Every service van, it can be seen as its own business. So you're already used to juggling multiple things that are all a little bit different, and this simply adds more of it. But just make sure you're ready for it. We did our first one very quickly, and then 4 years until we did the next one. We struck when we did because the opportunity was there and it wasn't going to be there later. So we kind of moved before we were ready. But it's still a very powerful thing to do. Just be ready for it. Make sure you've got your existing business running well.
I've run multiple businesses at the same time, and I think a key part that people want to understand is being ready for it. Part of that should include having management that you can trust, leadership that you can trust to oversee the day to day. Because I think of the old metaphor, gas and clutch. As you put on the gas, you take your foot off the clutch. Well, the clutch is the old business. You take your foot off that, and you don't pay attention to it, it's going to drop. Mm-hmm. So it's the importance of having people in place that you can trust to drive the day-to-day, and you stay in touch with the key performance indicators so you can manage the metrics and while staying focused on the growth of the other one.
Exactly.
What about your future in franchising matter? You're thinking about acquiring more brands. Like what were things direction for you?
Well, great question. And the answer is, I suppose, I don't really know. Right now I'm happy with the brands I have. I'm happy with the partnership I have with my business partner, Mr. Electric. So, we're good for now, but if another opportunity popped up, I can't say that I wouldn't look at it. You know, so much of this stuff that happens to people in their career happens almost by kismet. You know, it just, the opportunities appear when they do, and you just have to keep your ear to the ground and keep looking and be open to possibilities. I would rather probably expand, for example, our Mr. Router into other geographic areas before I would look to actively, start another brand altogether. But in the right circumstance, sure, I take on more. We're not at a point in our careers where we're looking to sort of stop and harvest. You know, we're not looking to exit the businesses anytime soon. And we're not looking to kind of plateau. And, we still want to reinvest in the business actively and continue to see it grow. So, if other opportunities pop up, we'd be open to it for sure.
Yeah, to assess what's a good strategic fit, because it sounds you're very much about strategy and alignment. So
yeah, definitely.
My last question, my favorite question. And when you think about the audience, young franchisors, some franchisors, but a lot of prospective franchisees, what have I not asked you that you would have asked yourself today?
Great question. I'll tell you a question I get asked a lot from people who are considering buying a franchise, and that's, would you do it again if you had your time back? That is the one question everybody I've ever spoken to, and I think I've spoken to probably 300 or 400 prospective franchisees of various companies over the past 10 years. Everybody asks, would you do it again? And the answer I always give, it's a bit glib, but it's also true, is I already have. Not only have I, bought multiple brands from the same company, but I've renewed all the contracts, every one of them. We got to our 10-year point when it's time to renew, and we decided to carry on and keep going. For us, it worked. It worked well. And there's a lot of static out there about the franchise industry. As you said, there's a lot of resistance to the idea of weekly royalties or, are these companies durable or are they legitimate? As long as you do your homework and research the company you'll be dealing with, if you're fortunate enough to find the sort of partnership I have with Neighborly, it's a no-brainer. I'd encourage anybody to seriously look at it.
I can't agree with you more. I've actually worked with CFA. I've created the list for the Canadian Franchise Association with a top franchise lawyer on all the questions. And the last question, the most important question, is would you do it again and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very important. So thank you for joining us today, Matt, and sharing your wisdom. If people in St. John's want to find you for any of the services, where do they find you?
And they find us in St. John's at our local office here, locally owned and operated plumbing and electrical companies. MrElectric.ca, sorry, MrElectric.com and MrReuter.ca have all the info you need to track us down. And we're here 24/7 for anybody who needs world-class service in their homes.
Well, and they will get that with the Neighborly family or brand. So thanks again, and here's wishing you continued success.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, and best of luck with the book. I'm looking forward to reading it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Franchise Canada Chats. Catch up on every episode of Franchise Canada Chats on SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio media. For more franchising resources, including how-to articles, expert advice, franchise success stories, and franchise opportunities, visit franchisecanada.online. Don't forget to subscribe to Franchise Canada eNews while you're there. You can also learn more about franchising at cfa.ca and connect with specific franchise opportunities at lookforafranchise.ca.